This is the Climb to Space.
Hello and welcome to the Decline Estate Internet Radio Stream, the show in which we get together to discuss the ups and downs of life outside the Matrix. Decline Estate is proud to bring you one of the surprisingly few netcasts in which the hosts do not support acts of aggression against you. You can find us on the web at declinefm.com. You will find a link to the live chat. The live chat is your go-to way to interact with other listeners or bring up points for discussion on the show. This is especially important today because we are meeting with a lovely lady who administers a personal evaluation test, which will blow your socks off, but more on that in a moment. I am Ronald McPaul, your beacon of freedom in the heart of Silicon Valley, and I'm joined by my handsome co-casters. I'll let them go around the horn and introduce themselves.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Eternal. Welcome to the show.
And this is LDL.
LDL's got a new mic. And the person I was alluding to before, who is on with us now, is Anne. Anne, are we allowed to say your full name? You're there from Seattle, not Portland. And Anne represents the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation. And what they do is they test people for pretty much what they're good at and what they're going to, what they might be happy with. So I guess I can put it in their words, and it's according to their website. But the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation has two primary commitments: to study human abilities and to provide people with a knowledge of their aptitudes that will help them derive more satisfaction from their lives. So welcome, Anne.
Thank you, Ron. I'm happy to be here.
Good. So kind of as a short intro to kind of what we're talking about today, because it's not every day we get to talk about aptitude testing. People, I think it's pretty universal. People seem to love things like horoscopes, astrology, fortune telling, Cosmo Magazine quizzes, Eternal. I think that's your thing.
Cosmo Magazine's my thing.
Yeah. Okay, good. The little quizzes are your favorite. You know what kind of martini you are. Because these things all claim to hold information very pertinent to our own lives. But one can say, I'm sorry, Eternal, that frequently these things, these games, these methods have limited use. You know, they're not necessarily, even the ones that are more scientific, like internet interest assessments, self-reported IQ tests, Myers-Briggs personality tests, even those, while somewhat instructive, they even happen to be some of the best conversation starters there are. They have their limitations. So I revel in this quest for answers, for knowledge, for fulfillment, and, you know, fundamental truth about myself, what's going to lead you on the most righteous path, the most one and fruitful one. And that is why I want to introduce, you know, decliners or Decline Estate to the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation. And feel free to comment on this, but I guess how the organization was started is kind of an outgrowth of the GE Corporation. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
Yeah, Johnson O'Connor, that was his name, his first name Johnson, worked for General Electric, and he was tasked with coming up with ways to make the company more efficient, more productive, and came up with tests for the different functions in the company. Like, the first two tests that he developed were actually fine motor dexterity tests, because at that time, this was in 1922, they were looking for people to be, you know, fast on the assembly line, putting together little electrical circuits. And so he developed these two fine motor tests that, and what he found when he gave these tests to people.
And these people were like the wage slaves. Like, these are very practical tests that were originally there, like
These were employees of GE.
Joking, of course.
And they were he found that people who were fastest the very first time they took the test were always fastest with equal amounts of practice. So, like, if they gave the test every day to the same group of people, the people who were slower never caught up. They didn't even out, where suddenly everybody was the same, you know, as they practiced giving these or taking these tests. So that was kind of the light bulb moment of saying, hey, you can actually draw conclusions about somebody's potentiality in a job just based on a single administration of a test like this. And from there, he developed other tests, like a test for observation to maybe look for people who would be good in quality control and things like that. And from there, kind of changed the focus over the years to let's help the individual find the right job rather than let's find the right individual for this job that we're trying to fill.
Yeah, and now it's a separate organization. It's not part of GE. And you kind of alluded to, well, I mean, one of the things I find so interesting about it is, I guess, how scientific, how measured it is. I can say for listeners, you may have taken the aptitude test before. You know, they might ask you what you're interested in or what you're good at. I can remember a test from high school on a computer. It's like 15 questions long, and it says, you know, do you like cutting hair? And then predictably at the end, they have a, you know, thing. It's like, you could be a barber is one of the options. It's, that's not what you do with Johnson & O'Connor. I think you guys do an assessment of what people's interests are. You ask it, for sake, you're trying to match things up. And I mean, I think you do this every day. You try to help match people to a fulfilling career. But, you know, they don't care what people say they're good at or what they like. You know, they're going to measure what people are good at, like you were just referring to. So they get you into, I can't speak for the Seattle office. I've seen the LA and San Francisco, but they get you into one of these nondescript little facilities spread throughout major US cities, and they get flashcards and puzzle pieces and pins and computer screens and pictures and word associations. What's most important, a stopwatch, and they, you know, you guys set out to measure it.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Seattle office is actually very beautiful. So just to put that out there. Yes.
Okay. We put this podcast out for the rest of the Johnson O'Connor people to hear, they'll know that Seattle is in fact the best office.
Well, in my opinion, I guess. We actually own a beautiful brownstone building, though, in Boston. They can probably lay claim to the most beautiful offices. But
so they're competitive.
Yes. But anyway, yes, that is probably, you put your finger on something that makes our testing quite different than other kinds of career testing, that we are actually giving you performance-based tests. So rather than filling out a questionnaire that says, well, I enjoy cutting hair. And then they say at the end, well, why don't you cut hair for a living? And that's not telling you anything that you aren't telling it. So the nice thing about our tests is that we actually have you put blocks together, or, you know, move the pins, like I said, with the fine motor tests, or arrange color caps in a spectrum.
I hate it. Or a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. Everybody has different tests that they, I really, really like that one. And
do you have a favorite one to administer to see people kind of respond to? Because I guess for the listeners, your people haven't done this yet, which is probably most people because we're introducing it. But some of the tests are done with Anne or with, you know, people like Anne, or some of them are done, I think, strictly by a computer. And you're left there to not cheat, which can be hard at times, but and it takes a couple days to do it. I guess, Andy, do you mind if I describe kind of like what it's like? I guess I have someone who has done this, as I kind of hinted at, and the kind of the experience, I guess, you know, you've probably done it too. But you arrive at these Johnson O'Connor not really knowing what to expect, I guess. Like, I was signed up like as a junior in college by my parents and who bankrolled it, which was nice. But, you know, I was perhaps a little bit nervous about what kind of omen it's going to hold for like the rest of my life.
Sorting hat in Harry Potter, right?
This is a good way to think of it.
Not Slytherin.
Yeah, a 7-hour long sorting hat.
Yeah. and you know, you guys. You get going to the station, and then you start thinking like, hey, this is kind of fun. I'm going from games. It's like on the back of a cereal box or something. And then all of a sudden you hit a frustrating one, which is bound to happen unless you score high in everything. And even some of the ones that the memory for design tests, I think, even people that score, like you could be frustrated by that one and still score high, I think. And there's always going to be something that's not your cup of tea. And I don't know if it's okay to disclose, Anne, but I guess there was like a prominent CEO or president who the blocks you were talking about for like threw him against the wall or something. He was so frustrated with the 3D thinking test.
That is the legend. Is that
the legend.
That there was some bank president or CEO who got so frustrated trying to put the wiggly blocks together that he actually threw them out the window. So that's what I've heard. I don't know. I haven't had anybody actually do that. I'm sure people were tempted, but they have not done that with me. But you were asking about, you know, that some of the tests are frustrating, mentioning that some of the tests are really frustrating. Some of them almost feel fun. And I think that's typical. And I think it's what's really interesting is that for each person, they're different tests. You know, there aren't some that, well, except for maybe memory for design, that everybody hates. And there aren't some that everybody loves. Yeah, we get a lot of complaints about that.
So
one.
What is this test that everybody hates? How does this work?
It's what the test consists of is you are shown a picture of a line drawing on a computer screen, and then the line drawing is taken away, and then you have an actual sheet of paper with dots on it, and you try to reproduce the line drawing on these dots that are on this page.
It's kind of like constellations in the sky. Like, they make no sense compared to what the stars are, and you just get really pissed off about it.
I think it's a difficult test, but because all of the scores are based on percentiles, which is comparing you to how other people do on the test, you know, so sometimes, you know, it's like graded on a curve. Sometimes, you know, the test is hard, and so you're compared to other people who also find it hard, and so you score higher than you think you will from the experience of taking it. But I think for the most part, you feel when you're taking a test whether you have that aptitude or not. You know, there's the ones that feel, oh, this is fun, and then there's the ones that feel like you want to beat your head against the wall.
Yeah.
Have you ever had on that test somebody with like photographic memory just ace it to be able to reproduce things quickly?
Well, that's the whole idea of an aptitude test, is that some people are, you know, you're going to have that bell curve of like some people are just going to do really, really, you know, or score really, really high on it, and some people are going to score really, really, really low on it, and then there's going to be everybody in between. So, exactly.
Yeah, and in this way, Johnson O'Connor collects valuable, you know, in theory, valuable information on you. And eventually, after that 7 hours that I was talking about, a pattern develops with your strengths and weaknesses. There's places where you shine, the places where you are shoddier, the places you're more likely to excel, and the places where you're likely to kind of get or feel stuck. But I think some of the greatest value in this is that, you know, you can feel fulfilled. That there's some places, and there's some places where you feel like you know, the most you can be, you can, you know, it feels like you get in that state of, I guess the term is like flow or being in the zone that people talk about, where like, oh, this is right for me, and time kind of flies and stuff like that. That's not how Johnson O'Connor markets things, I don't think, but that's kind of, I guess, my elusive goal is like, how do you get engaged? How do you get to the point where what you're doing for a profession is what you were doing for fun? And you probably have some good stories of people calling you back or doing follow-ups of going either in like the right direction or close or at least being a big improvement.
Yeah, and that's actually, you know, obviously one of the most rewarding things is being able to feel like, you know, here I helped somebody find out, you know, what their natural abilities are, and they were able to make a change that put them in a direction where they were much, much happier in their career or in their schooling than they were before. And I think that that's especially true just the way our system is set up, societal system is set up for how people get into jobs is very much based on education now, going to classes and taking tests and things like that. And we actually have one aptitude that we measure that we call graphoria. That's actually just a clerical speed test. So it's just the test consists of looking at numbers and just comparing them to see if they're the same or if they're different, and then, you know, marking them off. I don't know if you remember that one, Ron. But that is a test.
I do.
That aptitude is very useful in doing schoolwork, in taking tests, in doing worksheets, in taking notes, anything like that. Nothing to do with the subject involved, but just the process of learning something in the way that a lot of things are taught. When somebody scores really low on this test, it can make school itself frustrating. And even if they might have an aptitude for the field or the subject that the class deals with, but they don't have they don't have that Graphoria aptitude, so they can feel like, I'm not good at anything, or I guess I'm just stupid, or, you know, and it can be very discouraging, yeah. And it can make it hard to, you know, choose a direction and feel like you're going to succeed and feel good about it. And so sometimes that's actually a really key finding for a lot of people, is to say, oh, it's not that I'm stupid, or it's not that I fail at everything. It's just that I don't have this simple little clerical speed aptitude. So a worksheet that would take somebody who scored average or high a half an hour takes me an hour and a half, and then multiply that by however many classes you have, and that can get to be quite a burden.
Yeah, it's like trying to browse the internet with a bad low resolution monitor.
Right, exactly. That's the new metaphor, I guess, the modern metaphor. So the but it has been really, so sometimes we'll have people come in who are very discouraged in school and don't want to, you know, are feeling like, hey, maybe I should just give up and you know, do something else. Join the army, or, you know, just give up on school. And then they find out, hey, actually, look at all these. I have this high score, say, for, you know, structural visualization. That's the wiggly blocks again. In fact, I had one gentleman who I tested who that was his exact situation. That's what I'm thinking of, where he was thinking about leaving school. He tried business. He tried communications. He tried, you know, different things. Realized when after he came in for the testing that he really needed to be doing something like architecture or engineering or, you know, being a carpenter or something like that, completely, you know, not in the business and communications realm. And it just made all the difference after he got into his industrial design program, which is what he ended up doing. He just, you know, took off like a rocket. It was so exciting.
So you've kind of given us a starting some of these different topics, you know, 3D visualization and this Graphoria concept. I guess I was curious, how many different areas do you test on? And if you could you kind of go through a short range of what those involve?
Oh, sure. We test, there's 20, I think, two different aptitudes that we measure.
That's a lot more than I anticipated.
And that's I think I forgot to tell you who we're on with. Again, they introduced themselves, but that's LDL, who just got a new mic, just like your barn, Ann.
So, oh, good. This sounds great. Yeah. So I guess I'll just mentally start at the top of the bar graph in my mind, but the Graphoria I mentioned is the clerical speed. So it's obviously useful in school, but it also would be useful to, you know, people who work in an office doing more clerical type tasks, filing and those kinds of things. And I described the test a little bit already. And then right next to it on the bar graph is what we call ideaphoria. And Ron can probably speak to this also. But it's basically having...
She has all my scores, by the way. That's what that change of voice was. I mean, she knows too much about me.
That's right. I know it all. So somebody who scores high in ideaphoria has sort of a ready flow of ideas that's constantly flowing, being able to just come up with lots of different things to say about something. There are people who might feel comfortable having a radio podcast, or having, you know, being a journalist, or doing marketing, or teaching, you know, areas where you have to talk a lot or write a lot as part of your job.
And one thing, I mean, you know, as you hinted, and I think people who on the cast who are familiar with me kind of coming with things from two steps extra directions and stuff like that. It's also interesting that there's a lot of ideas with that trait, but not necessarily good ones. The hope is, if you're going to utilize that trait, if you're going to have a lot of ideas, that some of them will stick, or some of them will be, you know, the right way to describe something or to engage, you know, another person. I think it's ideaphoria is a cool word. I think the Johnson O'Connor Foundation coined that describes.
Yes, that's correct. We coined that word. Yeah.
And you guys say that kind of generally it's good for engaging or interacting with people, because, you know, I guess people, there's a myriad of ways to interact and engage and discuss things or educate, or it's a teaching trait and stuff like that. But a lot of these traits have, I mean, a lot of them will be like double-edged swords too, which I love to know, because it's very instructive for, if you have a high aptitude, it's not always a good thing per se, because sometimes you can have some high, this aptitude that's it's just like itch, and you're sitting there trying to contain it or not scratch it, and it's very, very distracting if you don't have an outlet for it. And it can kind of cause you to feel frustrated in one job and not really know why. Like, if I'm not, you know, I will do this podcast without having a, you know, without being paid for it, just because I need to scratch that itch, right? I need to engage people and come up with a lot of ideas. Otherwise, it's just saying random things at work, and it doesn't work out well for me.
That is actually an excellent point. We do think that a high score is, it creates a need to fulfill that high score or be able to use that aptitude. The Ideaphoria one is a good example, because you're absolutely right that it's a measure of quantity of ideas and not necessarily quality. That will depend on other things. The person who's high has, like a faucet or a fountain on in their head that they can't turn off.
It never, ever stops.
Exactly. So the person who has a job that calls for accuracy and concentration and asks for very little idea input from you would be very frustrating. It would be like you were trying to bottle up all those ideas and they'd be overflowing and creating havoc in your head. The example I like to give is, somebody who you want to be very accurate and meticulous is, for example, an accountant. And there is a reason that the term creative accounting is rather negative term. You don't want to get too creative when you're an accountant. Yes. So that is something that we say, that if you want to be an accountant, a low score in Ideaphoria would be an asset to you.
Just add a zero here and a zero there and everything looks good.
Yeah, exactly. And wrong.
Woohoo.
I have thought about that. Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. If you have more stuff to say, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to keep walking down the list of aptitudes, but...
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Keep walking down. That's great.
Okay. So then we also test another aptitude related to kind of brainstorming. It's called foresight, and it is the ability to see in any situation a lot of different possibilities. So somebody who scores high here is, in any situation can think, oh, we could go in this direction, or we could go in this direction, or we could go in this direction. And again, it creates a need to have something in the future that you're working towards, where you can channel all these possibilities that you're seeing in that particular direction. So it's just it's another what we call divergent thinking or brainstorming type aptitude, but it's a little bit different than the Ideaphoria.
And the way that test was developed, if I understand properly, and my mother hasn't done this, but has sent her five children to do it. We're keeping you guys in business, by the way. She
I appreciate that.
Yeah, right. I thought it was interesting that the foresight test you described, which it's kind of like the movie, like a stereotype or the iconic like inkblot test. Like you guys actually show people inkblots and tell them, like ask people to say all the different things. And that's kind of what I was like skeptically thinking. It's gonna be one of these things when I went there, and I was like, oh, you guys actually did have one of those tests, but it was useful. it was more, more quantitative. And then the second thing is that I thought it was supposed to be like another measure of Ideaphoria, like flow of ideas, but you guys realized that it was eventually that it was measuring something else.
Yeah, that's what was interesting, is that initially it was developed as an alternate measure of Ideaphoria, another way to measure the same aptitude. And actually, we actually found that it does not correlate with Ideaphoria. And so it's actually a different aptitude. And so people can score high on both of them, but sometimes they'll be high on one and low on the other one, or because they're independent, any combination is possible. But that's interesting to say about the Rorschach, because that is the test is imagine going into the psychologist and you just had to write down as many different things as you thought the ink blots could look like. You don't interpret what you write down, just how many different things you can think of that they might resemble.
Rorschach, yeah, thanks for the word. Yeah, exactly. I guess when I first contacted your guys' organization for the, I don't want to interrupt you from going through the list of of aptitudes. You were very generous answering LDL's question.
We can come back to that too.
We can kind of mix them too. Yeah.
Exactly.
Ron, do you mind if I actually interrupt with a quick question?
Oh, not at all.
Gonna head off base a little bit. I actually had a question regarding the test. So most of the tests we've been talking about have been aptitudes and performing some sort of task. But are some of the tests more social tests, like interactive tests, with like you would sit down and have some sort of conversation or talk about something or discuss something with the testee?
The closest thing to what you're probably asking is we do actually have a word association test where we say a word and then you as the person testing would say the first word that comes to mind. And
diagnose whether you're gay or not at this point. Just on the spot. Just, yep, it's you. You are the one.
No. Don't give that impression. What that actually relates to is kind of your approach, your work personality or your approach to work. And there's essentially two ways to score on the test. There is, you can score subjective, where somebody who is subjective tends to enjoy specializing in their work, having ownership of their work and not being responsible for the mistakes of others, but kind of having a clear boundary of what they're responsible for and having that be their own work. So an example might be, you know, a research scientist or, you know, a soloist in a choir, you know, people who kind of have a craft or an area of knowledge and they zero in on that and work fairly independently. And then the person who scores objective tends to enjoy working with and through other people. So they enjoy having the interaction and being more of a generalist rather than a specialist, doing a lot of different things, rather than one thing, you know, at a deeper level. And they, you know, for example, might be a manager or, you know, going with my soloist for the subjective person, it would be like a choir director. The choir director looks good when everybody sings together and everybody's working together. And that's their role. So that's probably the closest to what you were referring to in terms of a social test. But we don't have anything. Our tests are, we want to be able to score them in a quantitative way, not, you know, looking at things that are more just my own personal opinion about how well you interacted with me or I gave you a scenario and you said that you would respond this way. We want things to be more quantitative than that.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. You continue down the list at this point if you want to do that, or well, Ron, you want to ask your question?
Yeah, absolutely, and we can mix it in, and we have, don't worry, some good points of discussion to bring up other aptitudes. I guess one thing I was curious, Anne, because I don't, you know, I've read and tried to learn about the aptitudes because I find it useful, and to, you know, the best I've been able to tell, like it's been pretty dead on information. I mean, I've been happy to recommend it to other people in the past, and I haven't got any complaints thus far, you know, people sorting through it, but
I'm very glad to hear that. And we actually do get our business through word of mouth for the most part. We don't advertise. We are, you know, it's people like you who keep us in business.
Thank you, Anne. You're in your. I mean, that's a very hipster style of advertising, especially being in the Northwest. Sounds good.
I proudly proclaim my hipster status in Seattle.
Yes,
here.
Awesome. And you know, speaking of hipster, when I first contacted your guys' organization, I spoke with a couple of ladies in the San Francisco office who were very nice. But one of them mentioned that there's kind of like an old guard and a new guard in terms of like as an organization. Like it's, and this is observable when you go into the test. It's kind of like a, you know, like any organization has a generational gap in terms of or difference in terms of like, you know, technology and like tech savvy. And she was saying, and it might be her bias, saying that like, they're like, oh, some of the stuff is outdated or like what our technology is. And some people are saying like, oh, you know, this is good. What's your view, or kind of what is it like working within the organization and seeing like, you know, the whole spectrum?
I mean, I think you're right. I mean, there's, you know, in any organization, you know, there's going to be people who've been around for longer and then, you know, newer people. And then, the technology issue is certainly you know, something that we've kind of talked about and we sometimes debate about. You know, I actually really love the fact that I do not have a computer in my office, that I work with materials like those wooden boxes with these chips in them for giving different tests and the
human
blocks
beings.
And human beings. So I appreciate that. And I would actually be very sad if all of our tests went on the computer, and it would probably be possible, maybe not blocks, but there's a lot of tests that probably could be on the computer that are individual tests at the moment. So, but I don't know. I think it's more fun to take the test, and I hear this from all, from many clients, I should say, that they just, I had so much fun with the tests I did with you, but then I had to go on the computer. You know, so I think that is something that actually people enjoy, is that you're actually interacting with a human being, and it makes the testing process more fun.
Do you think that people who are taking those kinds of tests and are feeling good about, you know, testing with another person around, enjoy seeing the feedback from other people, you know, just in general, just the facial expressions and body expressions that the tester gives off?
Yeah, and then you can ask questions too. At the end of each test, we will give a brief explanation of, okay, this is what it's called, this is what it measures, and then somebody could ask about it, and they can, you know, it helps you understand, that's why I hated it so much, or that was a fun one, I liked that one. And I think it makes it, I think it deepens your understanding too. Instead of getting everything at the end, you're kind of finding out as you go along how you're doing on the tests and what the tests mean, and it adds to your understanding, I think.
Yeah, that's good. And then I just thought of it again, but Anne, you mentioned that graphoria test can be a big one. And we were, you know, using the analogy of looking at a small computer screen, it can be unwittingly like shape people's self-confidence, having, you know, being forced through the school system and having to be forced to, like, kind of look at a lot of papers. And that's, even though it's kind of, it's a clerical thing, it's something, you know, clerical speed is not regarded highly, being a quote unquote administrative assistant. It's not something people strive for, but that a lot of times kind of is the make or break point for whether people are good at school. And I hope she doesn't mind me saying this, but my youngest sister, who did the test in high school, she scored in the low category, but she's very bright, and and I think, like you said, she was high in structural visualizations, and that was maybe not initially, but eventually was a big confidence boost. And I think and please comment if it seems ironically that sometimes some of the ones people score the lowest on can in the long term be one of the bigger boost to the confidence, is to know, oh, that's just one trait. You can kind of sidebar it and realize, okay, I can outsource this. I can delegate it. I don't have to, I can do it. And then rather than combing through things, I can, if it's a graphoria one, I can hit Control F and try to find information on a thing, or ask somebody else to do it for me. You realize that it's not you as a person that's defunct. There's actually a specific trait that you might just not happen to excel in.
I think you're right. I think it's very interesting to learn about the low scores, and just to throw this out there, because we always want to make it clear to everybody when they come in that we don't think a low score is bad. And I think it can be very helpful to say, like you said, hey, this is one trait, but look at all these other things that were higher. And you know, I think it can be very helpful to people. And I've had some people, you know, really focus in on the low scores and say, what does this mean? And
yeah, there's a big drive to like internalize it, because it's like you're being, I mean, to a degree, it's like you're being put on trial. It's like, oh, who am I? What am I going to do?
Yeah, well, we think that it's like, you know, it's like finding out who you are. Just to reiterate that we don't think a low score means that you can't do something at all. It's something that doesn't come as easily to you. And then if you have to do it all the time, it might feel like you're swimming upstream every day. but particularly if you're not using your high scores, I think that's what we really emphasize, is that it's just like that the itch you had to scratch, like you how you phrased it earlier, that this is a part of how your mind works. It's kind of like the tools that you bring to any task that you're doing are those aptitudes that you have. And the closer match there is between what you're trying to do and what you're bringing to the table, the happier you are.
So I have a question that's been ringing in my head for a little bit here. Has anybody ever come into the testing with a good understanding that they really enjoy what they do, or have a good picture of what they think they're really proficient at, and then come away with something completely different and just been blown off their feet with it?
That's a good question. I think most of the time people are not surprised by their aptitudes, but I always remember the ones who are, and I do remember one young woman that I tested who was in a school or in a college to become a social worker, and she did score, I referred to the personality test earlier, she scored objective, which implies wanting to work with other people, which probably may be partly where her drive to want to become a social worker. But her highest score besides that was in that structural visualization. And she had never taken a science class beyond, the bare minimum requirement in high school. Always avoided math, always avoided science. And after the testing, she was so surprised by the results that she almost didn't know what to say. So it was a very, in some ways, frustrating evaluation for me. But she actually came back 6 months later, having taken a chemistry class, and decided that that's what she was going to study. She said, it was like discovering this whole new side of myself that I never knew before. And that was, I thought that was very appropriate, because it was a part of her and she just never tapped into it before.
That is cool. Do you mind me if I ask as to how she scored on the graphorial, the clerical test? Did she score really high or low on that, or just kind of in the middle?
It's been a while. I seem to remember that she really, her main high score was the spatial, so I know it wasn't high. It may have been average or low. That actually particular combination is a tough one for school, the high structural visualization, low graphoria.
That's what I was thinking.
Because even science is taught in a very sort of based on memorization, paperwork heavy kind of way, unless you go to a magnet school or for technology or something like that. For the most part, you're not going to get to engage your structural visualization in school, except for in maybe shop class.
It's calculation and worksheet heavy, definitely, in most public schools. So I could see why a person like her would think that they're not cut out for science and mathematics, would think that they don't enjoy that stuff, but really they just don't enjoy those classes in the school system.
So. Exactly. And then sometimes it can just give you that extra push to say, not talking about that particular woman, but to say, oh, if I jump through these hoops of going through this education, which I know so there's some aspects of it I won't enjoy, in the end, once I'm done, I'll get to a place that I will enjoy. And that can be a motivator to get through those, through the coursework.
Yeah, it was for me, I think. I mean, in a sense, you could think that the information was stuff I already knew. And you said frequently your people, aren't surprised. I came to you guys after I had changed my major to an engineering degree, and the top thing on your guys' list was engineering. But maybe I wouldn't have stayed the course through over long nights of misery studying, or not sleeping, stuff like that, if it wasn't. So that was, I have to say, that was useful. I think I'm glad that I did. One thing, losing my train of thought, but
LDL, not a high aptitude for trains of thought.
Yeah, Anne already established that one a little while ago.
Okay, so I was gonna take from one of our listeners, Jay Araby, asked, have you made any new tests since he gave a specific date of November 2008? But what I guess I want to kind of redirect that to, are you guys evolving your tests, or is it something you're pretty confident in the way you're doing things and you're pretty much going forward from there?
No, we're always trying to either, you know, to be able to test new aptitudes or, you know, refine an existing test to make it more reliable. And so that's part of the research that we do. So each individual office, like here in Seattle, you know, we test people and give them their evaluations. But there's also a research department, which is in Chicago, where they... you know, they do a lot of the statistical analysis and all of that important stuff. And we also do validation studies to say, oh, let's test a whole bunch of lawyers who are really happy in their work and see how they score. Or same thing with accountants, or same thing with engineers or people in marketing, or, you know, different things like that. And that's the data that we're looking at when you know, you come in as an individual and say, well, we tested all these lawyers and you scored similarly to how they scored and they're all happy in their work, so we think you might be happy as a lawyer, you know. So that's part of what we're basing our conclusions on. In terms of new tests, since November of 2008,
that is, I think, because the listener has taken the test and is, you know, personally curious, is there any new ones for him to know about? And I think there is some new information. Like, I think you guys recently published a book, and it became, I think one thing that was new, at least speaking with someone in the San Francisco office, is that it's understood now that inductive reasoning is more important, I guess, as a trait than maybe previously thought. Is that true?
Well, no, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's more important. I mean, that's actually the next one on the list too. So I might as well talk a little bit about inductive reasoning. We're actually trying to develop a test or a research project around inductive reasoning. But that test consists of looking at sort of rows of pictures of six pictures in each row, and you're quickly checking three pictures that have a common element and just going as quickly as you can through the test. So it's very much a speed-based test. The idea is that somebody who's low doesn't necessarily, or it's not that you can't make connections or draw conclusions, you know, among different pieces of information, but you'd like to have more time. So somebody who scores high tends to be very quick at drawing conclusions, formulating opinions, and they might enjoy fields where they have to respond quickly in emergency type situations, you know, first responder or a doctor in an emergency room, or, you know, a debater in a room or something like that, where you have to think on your feet.
If I can go kind of right for the throat, or kind of direct to home here for Decline to Stay and people that are familiar with the cast of characters, I can say, I know they haven't gone to do the testing, but a couple of our members, Eternal, who we're speaking with, and then Rutto, who is our tech specialist, I think they are, in my opinion, you know, I could be wrong, and they should, you know, I would encourage them to go in and get tested if they're interested, but I think they definitely have the inductive reasoning trait very strongly. It seems like, you know, you described it like you're kind of finding the common thread in things, and it's an important thing. Is like, it's a time test. It's very fast that it happens. There's like a certain like assertion and confidence of like going on to the next one after you make a decision and that determination. And it's, yeah, I mean, just like you said, it's you know, you have pictures and it has stuff that has to do with like camping, or they're all fish or stuff like that. Like stuff that seems, you know, it's obvious when pointing out what the rule is, but some people are able to kind of induce and, you know, synthesize, put together what that rule is very quickly. And, if you would, what kind of, careers do you direct people to that score high in this, or what are good applications for that? What should Eternal and Rutto be thinking about, even though I think they're already applying their skills pretty well?
Well, we all, you know, all of us who work at the foundation, I mean, and people who've been tested, it can become a very fun hobby to be kind of an amateur aptitude diagnostician.
I'm sorry. I should note too that I'm very much in my armchair statistician thing. I could totally be wrong.
Oh yes, but no, it's fun to guess, and it actually does give you a language to be able to look at different people to interpret, like, oh, I bet that person's high in inductive reasoning, like you yeah. just said, or
that's the most fun part about it. It's like a horoscope at that point.
Right. But of course, but if you really want to know for sure, then of course you want to come in for the testing. But it is fun to do that, what you just described. And the, you know, it, what I think is interesting about inductive reasoning is that it is, like I said, very much a speed test. And so you can have the same job, but one of which is very slow paced, or the same function or the same role, and one of which is very slow paced, like, say, a legal researcher, you know, or a law clerk for, I don't know, Supreme Court justice or something, where they're doing all this research and delving into things. And, you know, it's more important to be right and thorough and accurate than to be fast. And then other situations where if you're not fast, then you're the window of opportunity for being able to solve that problem or make that assessment is just gone, you know. So obviously working in the ER triage, you know, would be a prime example of that, where let me think about this overnight while this person's bleeding to death in front of me. You know, obviously you have to decide quickly and think.
Yeah,
and there is a certain, I liked what you said, Ron, about a certain confidence in making that kind of assessment, because I do think that part of the aptitude is just feeling comfortable doing that. And people who score lower typically like to double check. They'd rather be right than fast. And that's not the aptitude is, you know, you have a little more confidence in that opinion. You feel more comfortable making a decision instead of like, oh, I really want to see if maybe something else or see if something else could be the answer. So I think this is it. Even taking the test, I think this is the answer. These are the three, but let me check that. Let me look for another connection. And so areas where it is more important to be right than fast, that's an asset, actually, I think, to score lower, because the person who scores high is maybe not, I wouldn't say prone to jumping to conclusions, but they're so good at drawing conclusions that there might be a frustration with something that's slower paced. I actually have an anecdote there. A guy I tested a few weeks ago was a computer programmer, systems engineer, I think was his title. He was a recent college graduate. He worked for about a year after graduating from college.
But computer programmers are people that score like unusually high in a lot of things, you guys find, right?
Well, we did one of the research studies that we did seemed to indicate that this was a group of rather elite software engineers that were working on had been chosen to work on this special project, and that group as a whole did tend to score high on a lot of things.
As elite engineers, that makes sense.
Yeah. So the this gentleman that I tested was all through school, through college, he had worked at the tech support desk, and he loved it. He said he enjoyed, like, people could call with, you know, some really simple, basic problem, like their computer wasn't plugged in, or it could be something really serious and complicated. And there was almost always a deadline pressure. My paper's due in 2 hours, or my paper's due tomorrow morning. And you know, so he really had to kind of leap into action and try and solve a problem for somebody. But his job that he'd gotten since then, since his first job out of college, was a systems engineer, which is not the same role. That's where you're designing a system. You're not diagnosing a problem as much as you're trying to put together something that's logical, that will make sense and allow the people to run the reports they need to run and all of that. And he actually told me that in his first evaluation, after being there for, I think, 6 months, was that they told him he was solving problems too fast. That's the exact quote. And
sounds
because,
like a turn on Roto.
Right. So the person who, because he would just, he felt that he was just getting so impatient with all the minutiae of checking this and that. And just wanted to, well, this is the main thing we want to do. So let's, you know, just getting it out there and it's like, okay, now I'm ready for the next one, you know, but that's not the way his job worked at that time. So we actually talked about him maybe getting into kind of computer security or maybe testing or, you know, something that would be more trying to, you know, break into something, find the holes, find the weak spots that, rather than designing something, a complicated system from scratch that would have that level of detail of having to put it together.
So this has been interesting listening to you describe me for the past like 8 minutes here. That's pretty spot on. It sounds definitely quite accurate.
Isn't that interesting? It's just fascinating.
I work as a, I guess I'm a systems engineer / programmer. That's my day job. And then
yeah,
my
you were describing him.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, you know, systems engineer during the day, radio host in the evening, and then Batman late at night. And so does that sound pretty typical for somebody with a high inductive?
Well, the Batman part definitely. Definitely Batman, you know.
Oh shit, I wasn't supposed to say that. Oh, I'm not really good at the superhero thing. I'm getting used to it.
Well, actually, one thing I say sometimes to people who do score high in that aptitude, the inductive reasoning, is that a lot of the professions that you see on TV are kind of high inductive reasoning professions, because the idea of having having a house is a perfect example, you know, having a problem that gets solved over the course of an hour and then it's over and then next week you have another problem.
It's like picking up a lot of Rubik's cubes and like they're just doing them all really fast and then leaving.
Yeah, and sometimes I'll use that phrase of, for somebody who's high in inductive reasoning, it's nice to have a job where you can kind of parachute in and parachute out, just solve the problem, you know, leave the silver bullet, and then, you know.
Kind of like Dexter, you know, just swoop in, kill somebody, swoop out.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that.
have you seen Dexter? I just want to make sure I'm not
weird, TV, yeah, TV show reference, not literal Batman murder reference. I'm not supposed to say you're Batman either. One thing I wanted to say too, and of course I'm firmly implanted in my armchair at this point, kind of just, you know, suspicions. But you know, one thing that kind of led to that is Eternal, who's our show manager. He said one thing he mentioned kind of offhand was in creating the podcast, you know, he did research, you know, on all the people who said like, hey, I want to join you. That sounds good. And he was pretty quick about it too. I mean, obviously like, oh yeah, these are good people. I went through their, you know, their post history or whatever. And he even said it out loud. He's like, yeah, I feel like I'm, you know, good at bringing talent together, kind of like, you know, I guess, you know, diagnosing who, or kind of reasoning who are good people to involve, and you get them together, and like that's like a, you know, a big part of it too. And I think what you guys say you know, because I didn't score super high on that. I mean, I was in the average range, and I was definitely one of those people who said a lot of times, let me think about a different way to slice that one. Right. Yeah, I guess, I mean, as a trait, it's good for, I mean, it is a management trait. A girl I sent there who might be one of these people, she went like a month ago to the San Francisco office. She might be one of those people who kind of thinks opposite, one of the rare ones that thinks opposite to what her gifts actually were, because she's self-reports as being fairly, you know, introverted in nature. But then to her surprise, she scored very inductive and also very... and also very objective, you know, the traits that you said for quick for diagnosing and also wanting to work with people, but then kind of, you know, described yourself as being kind of more introverted, maybe more anxious sometimes.
That's a good time for me to point out that introvert extrovert is a different trait than objective subjective. And you know, sometimes that happens a lot, where you'll have somebody who scores objective but who is an introvert, that they've been drawn to maybe working more by themselves just from their introversion. But in terms of work, they're, you know, they might want to, maybe they don't want to work, you know, as in sales or something where they're having to meet new people all the time, but they would enjoy, you know, working with a group of people that they know, leading that group, you know, and maybe in the case of your friend. So.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
We have another friend who sounds exactly like that, who's our host on the show, who's unfortunately, he's been sick today, so he couldn't
come
host with us.
Tech expert.
Oh, I was talking about Jason, not...
Oh, yeah, actually, Toast would be another one, too.
Yeah. He's going to be a teacher, finishing up his certification and everything. And yeah, that's exactly the way he works in terms of... I've had so many conversations about personality stuff and introversion, extroversion, and all this stuff with him over the years without knowing anything about, you know, what you guys do at Johnson O'Connor, but just kind of studying things like Jun personality types and all that. And you know, he came to the same conclusion that, you know, despite being introverted and needing that introversion, you know, alone time or minimal interactions sometimes to recharge, he really enjoys working with people and interacting with people day to day. Whereas someone like me, I personally am like a true introvert most of the time. I'm doing this, but I'm also sitting in a room by myself doing it, so it's a little different. And for me, I definitely don't mind being fairly isolated. So I work from home a lot, so I'm isolated a lot of the time. That's not a problem for me. I don't crave that interaction every day. So I find that interesting that you're there sitting there describing the exact characteristics of our good friend.
Yeah, it's interesting that one of the things you can do with the to use the aptitude testing for is it does give you a new language to understand yourself, and then also, as we've talked about, to speculate about other people and think, oh, I think, you know, and it also helps you realize that people have different strengths and gifts, you know, so you say, hey, this is, you know, if I'm putting a team together, maybe I don't want everybody who's just like me on the team. Maybe I want people who will give a range of different talents and different aptitudes, you know.
So, yeah. We're almost out of time here on the top of the hour. Usually, we like to stick around on a particularly interesting show. We like to stick around after the end of the hour. We'll play our outro music and everything and stick around for an after show where you kind of have an even more informal discussion, get some listener involvement and everything. I don't know if that's something you want to stick around for, or you're free to go at the top of the hour in a few minutes here if you want to. So it's up to you whether you want to stay or not.
But it's been very fun.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun talking to you guys. I probably do have to go. I have to walk my dog, so I should go do that.
Oh, I love dogs. What type of dogs do you have?
We just got this dog about 3 weeks ago. It's a rescue dog, and he's a terrier poodle mix. But he's fairly small, but he's not at all yippy. He's very very calm, and we named him Buster after Buster Keaton because he has this very stoic sort of expression.
Nice.
So he does need to take a walk now, so I should probably go do that. But thank you so much for having me on the show. I really enjoyed talking to all of you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for
so much, Ian. Yeah, we very much appreciate your time and your audio quality. You went the extra effort to get a microphone to join us. So thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
So Ron, you want to take us out here?
Yeah, let's do it. It's about 2300 hours Eastern Standard Time and 2000 Pacific. So keep Obama in president, you know. He gave us a phone. He's going to study human abilities. You too can choose a declined state as we continue to feel all the feels on either declinefm.com or declined state on iTunes. I would like to remind you that declined state is still brought to you free of charge as well as paid advertisement free. We hope to soon have a Bitcoin donation link for those interested in help keeping the servers running, the website developing, and the show going. I have a big thanks to all of our hosts, tech experts, researchers, contributors, our listeners, and of course, Ann Steiner for joining us. Declined State is a group effort motivated by our love of liberty, as well as capital ties and free market monocles. Remember, when asked, always decline state. This is Ron Paul saying good night, everybody.
This is Eternal. Big thanks to Ann for sticking with us for a whole hour. Thank you so much. Have a great night, everybody.
And this is LDL. You all have a great night.